The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
And this is The Hard Shoulder. Kieran Cuddihy with you until 7 o'clock this evening. Pascal Donoghue is the Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Central, and he's with me in studio. Minister, you're welcome to The Hard Shoulder. So listen, an awful lot discussed at Cabinet today. An awful lot has happened in the world of politics as well over the last week. But first, tell me about this extra money that's been earmarked for the National Development Plan, over $2 billion. Is it extra money for extra projects or an expanded budget to deal with inflation?
The majority of it will be used to fund commitments that we've already made in the National Development Plan, is the truth of us. We have seen 2 years of soaring inflation. We are going to experience the delayed effect of that in 2024. Most of it will go into funding commitments we already have. A small number of government departments will have the opportunity to move ahead with additional projects, which they'll announce a little later in the year. We can increase capital spending at a time few other countries can't. But the truth of it is also it's about preserving commitments that we have at the moment.
Has that soaring inflation, as you describe it, had an impact beyond the need for additional funding? Have any projects been delayed at this point, or
not
has an
so
X been
far.
Put through any?
Not so far, but we would definitely get to the point during the year that the effect of inflation combined with commitments the government has would be increasingly difficult to maintain both. So far, we've been able to keep all the different projects that we're committed to on the road, able to go ahead with commitments in relation to school building, with university accommodation, in relation to new social homes. But I think it's just so important with all that is going on at the world, and also with the fact that our public finances continue to be in good health, that we're able to finance this kind of investment, which we are, which goes back to the value of our public finances and money in surpluses. It's why we can afford to do this.
Lots of hostages to fortune have been kind of created trying to look into the crystal ball of inflation, but are you and your colleagues more confident that we're in a healthy place, that further supplementary budgets won't be needed, if we'll describe them that way?
Yes, I am. 2 years ago, I would have been in your show. Inflation was well above 10%. Then it began to fall, but it was still below 5%. I think there's every possibility that we'll see inflation of between 2 and 3% for this year. And while that does still mean that prices are going up, they are going up at a fraction of the speed that they were over the last 2 years. And assuming, and this is an important assumption, that we're able to avoid further global security shocks that have a big impact on the availability of energy, I'm very, very hopeful that the really difficult years of the cost of living crisis will be able to say they are behind us. And we'll be able to catch up on that now across this year and next year.
Amongst the other things we learned from the Cabinet meeting today is that we're going to be signing up to this EU migration pact, so bringing our rules in line with other European countries. We have our own domestic changes as well, so less reliance on hotels where there is only one hotel in a locality, less reliance on hotels overall down the line. I mean, it's been described in some quarters, I think on the front page of the Mail, as a crackdown on immigration. Is that how you'd describe it?
I would describe it on implementing the law fairly and efficiently is how I would describe it. Look, if you look at where we are at the moment.
So is it being implemented unfairly or inefficiently at the moment?
No, but what happens is we've a better chance of implementing what we want to do if we do it in coordination with other countries, is the truth of it. What is now happening with migration, we've had millions upon millions of people moving to or across Europe because of Ukraine, because of the conflict in the Middle East, and because of the impact of climate change in parts of Africa. All European countries are experiencing this. We can see this in the news, see what's happening in Greece, see what's happening in Italy, see what's happening in other parts of Europe. What is now happening is Europe is trying to act together to find a better way of managing this issue. And the best way of a small island off the edge of Europe being able to deal with such a global change is by acting consistently and in coordination with Europe, which is what the announcement is about today.
Some of the other matters I mentioned have nothing to do with that migration pact. There are own, you know, domestic measures that are being put in place. It strikes me very few of them are short-term measures. You know, we're talking about massive expansion in kind of state-owned property, but the timeline for that is 2028. You know, we're talking about kind of rapid builds. Now, it's easy to say kind of rapid. I'm not sure how rapid they often are. Alan Kelly, I was looking back through the archives, was the first person to talk about kind of rapid build modular homes to solve the housing crisis. That was 9 years ago. In the short term, there's still going to be a huge reliance on hotels, isn't there?
There will be, in the short term, continued use of private accommodation, and we are going to do all we can to try to minimise the effect that it has on remaining hotels and tourist facilities, particularly in smaller towns, villages and cities that depend upon them. The very difficult truth, we just need to make the case to this to your listeners, is the changes that are now leading to such change in the movement of people are going to be with us for some time. And here in Ireland now, we need to move out of thinking and accepting that this is a short-term emergency, which mainly was due to the war in Ukraine, and finding ways in which we can effectively implement the law, but accept that that will still mean there are far larger numbers of people coming to Ireland lawfully, and we will need to find different ways in which we can accommodate them.
And why should people have confidence that this plan might work when, you know, direct provision was a temporary system that was introduced, when before the outbreak of the war in Ukraine, Roderick O'Gorman then this plan to kind of overhaul it that crashed on the rocks of reality. I mentioned rapid build housing, maybe not in this context, but certainly it has been suggested in other contexts and hasn't become the reality some hoped. You know, why, when people have been through all of that, should they think, well, I think this plan is going to work?
Because for me, it has to work. It has to be based on the fact that we must deliver this plan rather than it being a plan that is based on hope. The reason why I say this is Ireland, no more so than any other country, can't change the flow of people around the world. We can't insulate ourselves from that. Politicians who make that claim let their countries down. So we are going to have people coming to Europe, and a part of coming to Europe, they will be coming to Ireland, they'll be coming to other countries in Europe. And what this plan honestly admits is that in the short term, we are going to have to continue to use the private sector to accommodate them. The next part will be then the state owning facilities, which the state will buy existing buildings. And then the bit that's the most difficult a bit to deliver is the bit then that we're honestly saying will take the longest, which is the 2028 you refer to, which is that the building of facilities will take time. So for me, it is an honest plan. Mm. Can people have faith that we will deliver us? It's up to us to be able to show that we can.
Given that the short-term reality won't change then, as you say, that, you know, and you have to be honest with people, there's still going to be a reliance on private accommodation, on tourist accommodation, on hotels. Is the reality then that we're just going to have to put up with some of the unsavoury scenes that we've seen outside these hotels?
I would make the case that we don't. I think people absolutely have the right for a peaceful protest. I have seen much protest that is entirely peaceful, but any behaviour that is intimidatory, either to those who are in facilities or to the communities within which the facilities are located, should not be tolerated, in my view.
Do you worry that there is a kind of an orchestrated attempt to intimidate, and not just the people in them, not just the people running them, but policymakers, politicians, NGOs, people in the media? A lot of people would have seen, and he didn't want to make himself the story, so I'm not going to use his name, but a journalist in RTE last night, the focus of an awful lot of unwanted attention at one of these protests.
Yes, there are efforts made to intimidate politicians and increasingly journalists. Is it coordinated on a national level? I don't know about that. I fear it might be, but it's certainly coordinated at the events themselves. But in acknowledging that, and this is feeding into the broader discussion on politics and the discourse around politicians as well, the answer to your question is yes. But also, the further context of this is the vast majority of people, the overwhelming majority of people, are completely civil, completely decent in expressing opinions to politicians and others, even when they completely disagree with them. And I think we do a disservice to the overwhelming majority of people in our country who recognise the role of politicians and journalists, even if they don't always like us, they recognise the role we have. And we perhaps amplify a bit too much the voices of a tiny minority of people by letting by giving an indication perhaps that they can capture or change the public debate.
I mentioned at the outset, it has been a big week in politics, domestic politics. Why did you decide not to run for the leadership of Fine Gael?
Well, I've been asked this question for years about do I want to be Taoiseach or party leader. I always said the answer to that question is no. And when push came to shove, the answer remained no. And the reason for that is I have lots of ambitions regarding what I want to do in public life. I've achieved some of them. There's a lot more I want to achieve. And one of those has never been Taoiseach, our party leader. It's always been about things I want to make happen and things I want to do.
Did you think about it, though?
Wouldn't be human in a moment of such huge change if it didn't cross your mind. I'm a reasonably cautious and deliberative and try to be, when I can, be thoughtful politician about the work that I do. But I really ended up back where I begun. I've worked for 3 Taoiseach. Please God, I'll have the chance to work for a 4th one. I see what's involved in the job and being a Taoiseach or party leader. And my ambitions, in truth, have always lied elsewhere.
Why? What is it about the job of being leader or Taoiseach?
I think it's more about the objectives of what you can achieve. I've always had very clear views regarding what I would like to do on behalf of our economy, the public finances of our country, the kind of things I'd like to be involved in public life, both here in Ireland and here in Europe.
As Taoiseach, it's harder to affect change, that you're kind of managing the politics
when
of things
Taoiseach,
too often, is it?
You're involved in everything. As a minister and the work that I do within the Eurogroup, I can focus in on a particular set of things. And there are broader trade-offs in terms of your private life, other things that you can do, all of which you lose when you become party leader, let alone Taoiseach. That's why it's never been an ambition, Ciarán. And when push came to shove, as I said, it still turned out not to be.
Will you definitely run in the next general election?
Yeah.
Are you sorry, or would you be sorry to lose out on your current ministry in a cabinet reshuffle?
This is the point at which I'm going to try to be diplomatic, Ciarán. I've been involved in these moments before. The new Taoiseach will have an incredibly difficult set of decisions to make. I'm not going to make them any harder for him. I'm not going to be out lobbying in public. I'm not going to be making the case for what I do and for what I should be doing. It's up to him. He knows me well enough. I've worked with him now for many, many years, and I'll entirely respect any decision that he makes.
What does getting back to basics mean in your mind? So we've heard a lot about this from some within Fine Gael. Simon Harris hasn't used that phrase himself, but he has talked about kind of a reset and refocusing on business and enterprise and some traditional values. I mean, it means different things to different people within the party,
I'd
wager.
Back to basics is not a phrase I would use. When I think about back to basics, it tends to be some kind of morality crusade that normally leads to difficulties for politicians who create them. I mean, what I've heard Simon talk about is the fact that our party has particular qualities that it's made the case for over the years. And in the final part of this Dáil, and as he takes over the running of the government for the next year or so, he just wants to ensure they remain focused on. What are those things that would be important to me as part of all of that, Ciarán? I'd pick out a few. The first one is the tone around politics. I think it's extremely important. We can have a tone in public life here in Ireland. That means when you disagree with somebody and even strongly disagree with them, it doesn't mean they're an enemy of the people. You don't traduce them. You don't traduce their motives. Tone for me is really important. It means recognising there are lots of things the state can do and make a big difference to, but it can't do everything. It means making the case for public finances and some reality around them. And it means making the case for recognising, for example, that those who create jobs within our country need to be recognised and continue to be recognised in the years ahead.
Yeah, which kind of brings us to the point, again, Simon Harris said he wants to prioritise business and enterprise. Now, there was a story in the Irish Times yesterday, it was on the front page, that some within the party, including an unnamed minister, think that the cost burden has been increased too much on businesses and employers. We actually had Pat Crotty on the show yesterday from the Vintners Federation, a small business owner himself, and he said likewise. If you want to pop on those headphones, you can take a listen to what Pat Crotty had to say.
The capacity to soak more cost is gone. If a business makes 5% profit and the government increases your cost by 6%, you're now in a loss. nor is your bank manager not talking to you. You might be late paying a bill. It's making life very difficult, and it's all government driven. So otherwise healthy businesses are being made unhealthy by government action. And it's not about the wages. It's not about the minimum wage. It's about government implementing a social policy without a budget. We're their budget. I would say we already know there are businesses closing every week, that the next budget is live, horse, get grass. It's too far away. We need something to happen in the meantime.
So, to be fair to Pat Crotty, because I asked him about it, he wasn't opposed to minimum wage increases, changes in PRSI, increased leave entitlements, pension auto-enrolment. His argument effectively is too much happening too quickly.
And we need to look at how we can pace out these changes. We do, and in fairness to Pat and many other employers, very few of them have actually pushed back on any of the individual measures that have been brought forward. They actually understand the value of them.
No.
The auto-enrolment system, which has helped in making sure that 800,000 people in our country will have a pension later in life. It'd be really easy for some organisations to come out and say, we shouldn't be bringing that in now. And it's actually to their great credit, they haven't. So we do have to look at how we can pace these changes that won't create an even higher burden or costs for employers at the moment. And for example, the Minister for Finance only said yesterday that there are matters in relation to the operation of the PRSI code that he's willing to look at before the budget.
Okay.
That work is underway at the moment.
So possibly some change outside of the budgetary cycle.
They are possible. He said yesterday he's looking at that at the moment. All of these changes individually are ones that in the long run will make this country and our society better off and will make our economy wealthier. The question is, how do we get to them?
One final question, because there's been a focus on Simon Harris's record, good and bad, over his time in political life, including a promise in 2017, no child would wait longer than 4 months for spinal surgery. The reason I bring it up is in a few minutes, we're going to be hearing from a lovely young fella, TJ McIntyre, 19, but confined to a wheelchair for life because he had to wait so long. So his health problem was solvable, but then the delay meant when he got to the top of the queue, he was inoperable. The curvature in his spine was so bad, and he doesn't live a day without pain. Do you think that as Taoiseach, Simon Harris owes it to people like TJ to finally fulfil that promise, albeit 7 years too late?
Yeah. So, my God, like, if Simon was here, like, he would say to you, of course he wants to help TJ. Of course he does. And like, the reason we haven't been able to deliver what TJ wants isn't because of this lack of compassion. And it's certainly not lack of compassion for Simon Harris. It's because the challenges that we have had at times with getting the surgeons, getting the expertise, making sure we have operating theatres open or available to help TJ and to help others who are vulnerable and in great medical need within our country. And Simon Harris doesn't need to become Taoiseach to try to fulfil the compassion that he has to TJ and others. Like, I've seen in Simon over the many years I've worked with him, like, the compassion and trying to help those who are vulnerable and trying to help those who are being let down. And he has helped many, but there are always those that we have not been able to fulfil our commitments to. And whether Simon is Taoiseach or not, or regardless of what was about to happen to him, he doesn't lack in compassion in trying to meet those needs and trying to help people such as TJ.
We'll hear TJ Coughlin's story after the break. Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform, Pascal Donoghue. Minister, thanks a million for joining us.
Thank you, Ciarán.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciarán Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.